Yeah. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm just listening in the queue part. That's radio talk. I was listening in queue. That's something I can hear in my headphones, but you can't. To Bush yesterday swearing in the new Attorney General, Michael Mukasey. John Ashcroft attended the ceremony. Can you imagine that? Anyway, the one person who was missing in this parade of religious freaks, neo-Nazis, and morons was Bush's Lito Tejano, who was noticeably absent. But, of course, he was there in spirit, as Bush very quickly let the audience know.
New Attorney General, as our new Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, follows in the footsteps of a fine man and a fine American.
Yeah?
Al Gonzalez. I have known Al since our days working together in the state of Texas.
Yep.
As White House counsel and as Attorney General in my administration, Al Gonzalez worked tirelessly to make this country safer and to ensure that all Americans receive equal justice before the law.
What about the new guy?
For many years, I've witnessed his integrity.
The new guy.
His decency.
Mukasey.
And his deep dedication to the cause of justice.
Yo, it's time for the swearing in.
I'm grateful for his friendship. I thank him for his service to our nation.
What about Michael Mukasey? Oh, my God. Now, the only thing Bush left off there was, and now I'm going to contribute to his legal defense fund. I hope everybody in this room will write a check. Of course he's known Al since their days working together in the state of Texas. You know what they work together on? Saving Bush's drunken ass more times than he can count. Got his driver's license expunged. See, in Texas, the driver's license situation in Texas is a little bit different. Anything that ever happens to you that involves court is recorded with your driver's license. And both Laura Bush and George Bush, right before he ran for president back in 99, I think, Bush's Lito Tejano, Alberto Gonzalez, purged the driving records of both Laura and George. And, you knew that. Anyway, Al Gonzalez worked tirelessly to make this country safer, you know, from college professors and Code Pink members, yeah. And he goes on to say, and to assure that all Americans received equal justice before the law, and equal time on the torture tables, or equal number of illegal wiretaps, and over the years I've witnessed his integrity and his decency and his deep dedication to the cause of justice, and to fire those pesky prosecutors who weren't fascist enough for me. That's all right. I just got to keep this war going for another 10 months. Yeah. Well, the show is going to go downhill from here tonight. After, you know, you start out with Bush at the very beginning. I'd look for a power failure here before the night's over for sure. It would be unfair of me not to mention that we did have rain last night here in North Georgia. The drought here has produced a deficit of 16.5 inches of rain, which, because of the wonders of hydrology, has lowered the reservoirs that service the Metro Atlanta area by about 17 feet. But the drought itself, if we had 16.5 inches of rain, we would be even for the year 2007. So, as you know, there was a prayer thingy at the state capitol yesterday. Sonny Perdue and Casey Cagle. Casey and Sonny, our governor and lieutenant governor. You know, they're Republicans. And they had three ministers. They had, if you're keeping track, a white male, a black male, and a black female. And they're all Protestant. It's supposed to be an ecumenical prayer thingy. And as I mentioned, there are no Jews, no Muslims, no Hindus, no Sikhs, no Wiccans, no Zoroastrians, no Native Americans. You would think that since Atlanta is built on ground that used to belong to the Cherokee Nation until, you know, our our forebears here in Georgia butchered them and ran them off in the Trail of Tears, that they would have had somebody from Native American culture. But no, it was, you know, it was ecumenical, but that meant Protestants. So they had their prayer meeting, and last night, what time was it, Kathy? About the time when we got off the air here, right around midnight. I looked outside, and it was raining. So we got 0.14 inches of rain last night here in the metro area. 0.14, which is about 1/1,000th of what we need. God is such a tease when he wants to be, isn't he, huh? You want rain? Y'all want rain down there? Here, dribble, dribble, dribble. That's all. That's all you get. Pray to me again.
But you know that guy up in Cobb County used that as an excuse to just, you know, flood his yard and his new grass with precious water.
Well, the update on the guy in Cobb County that I've been talking about, I'll give that to you a little bit later tonight, because one of our regular correspondents out in California, is it California? No, Seattle. James in Seattle wrote me a nice email about that. So I'll share that with you in a little bit. This comes from the wire services. Barry Bonds, Major League Baseball's home run king, indicted today on perjury and obstruction of justice charges. This after a four-year federal investigation into whether he lied under oath to a grand jury looking into steroid use by elite athletes. Now, I gave up on professional sports a long time ago. The whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, is a joke. It just, I don't care if it's football, basketball, baseball, hockey, all of it. It's just a damn joke, and it's a sad joke. You know, I can slip very easily into the, well, when I was a kid mode, and really mean that. You know, I was a kid listening to Detroit Tigers or the Cleveland Indians or the White Sox on the radio. When I was a kid growing up, Cleveland Indians, it meant something, you know, at least I thought it did. But it's all gone to hell. So the whole Barry Bonds thing, in one sense, I really don't care, haven't cared, couldn't care any less than I already do. Suzanne in North Miami wrote to me today, and she said the subject line was, "Breaking news alert, Bonds indicted." And Suzanne writes, "Yeah, Mike, that's the American way. Let's go after this lying son-of-a-bitch baseball player. After all, he ruined my life. He turned my world upside down. I'm sure he did the same to yours, right?" Imagine, Suzanne writes, "We have murderers in the White House, liars in the Department of Justice. Our government is spying on Americans. Our civil liberties are circling the drain. Our elected officials aren't doing what we put them in office to do. And Barry Bonds gets indicted?" Everything, Suzanne writes, has been turned upside down since this freak was handed the presidency. And even though his second term is almost over, this dark, sickening feeling lurks inside me that it's not really almost over. And that maybe it's just begun. Suzanne in North Miami. Yeah, that's the way I felt. You know, breaking news. Barry Bonds indicted. Why is that breaking news? I don't get it. I just don't get it. And so many nights, I was telling Kathy, so many nights, you know, the last hour before we go on the air, I try to catch as much of the Overman program as I can. And by the time he comes on, I've already got my program all set for that night. And so many nights, I'll have certain topics I want to cover, and by God, Oberman gets to him first. Not that, you know, I'm not comparing myself to a superstar on MSNBC, but it's kind of interesting, I guess, because we both have news backgrounds, and kind of pick the kinds of stories that we know would be picked if we were still working in news. Yada yada yada. Now, some nights it works the other way. Some nights I'll have a couple of hot topics in the next night, like the bridge player thing last night. I had that all set to go, and he stole it from me. And he had the bridge people on tonight. But this happens quite a bit. The next story coming right after the break is one that he did tonight. But I just wanted to tell you, I had it first. Okay?
Taking all my pills, but I'm still not sleepy. Tried to trick myself into thinking that I'm not awake, that it's
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
He said, don't make a promise you won't keep. Don't betray the earth beneath your feet. And we walked on the reservation road.
21 past the hour.
And just for that one moment,
the story that caught my attention and obviously caught somebody on Oberman's writing staff was this the story about Santas. The Santas in Australia's largest city, Sydney, have been told not to use the traditional Father Christmas ho 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 greeting because it may be offensive to women. Well, yeah, that struck Kathy as awfully funny. The Santa Clauses in Sydney, Australia, have instead been instructed to say ha ha ha. That's according to the Daily Telegraph in that lovely country. Yes, it is a real story. It is. It was right in the newspaper there, Kathy. One disgruntled Santa told the newspaper that a recruitment firm warned him not to use ho 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 because it could frighten children and was too close to the U.S. slang term for a prostitute. A ho. Julie Gale, who runs a campaign against sexualizing children, which I certainly agree with, even though Julie Gale happens to be a little bit of a right-winger, but it's a website, Kids Free to Be Kids. Even she said, give me a break. She told the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph of Sydney, we are talking about little kids who do not understand that ho, ho, ho has any other connotation, nor should they. Leave Santa alone. A local spokesman for the recruitment firm, Westaff, that hires the Santa Clauses in Sydney, by the way, that firm is based in the U.S., said it was, quote, misleading, end quote, to say the company had banned Santa's traditional greeting and is being left up to the discretion of the individual Santa himself. Oh, yeah, bat squeeze. You know what you bastard said. You know what you told him to say. Don't say ho, ho, ho. Say ha, ha, ha.
You know what I think is more disturbing to children? I think that it's very confusing for kids to try to figure out why there are multiple Santas when they're driving around town. Is Santa ubiquitous like Jesus? I mean, is he here? He's there? He's fat? He's skinny? He's white? He's black? He's tall? He's short? Which is the real Santa? Not that Santa goes ho, 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 but every time you turn around, there's another one.
Yeah, I know. It is definitely a problem. It's a serious, serious problem with little kids. And I've never had an answer having had little kids. You know, I always tried with all the little kids that I had that are now these aging adults. I always tried to keep them free of any kind of religious dogma whatsoever. I don't think the only one of my children I ever took to a church was Chris, and that was for the wedding of my producer when I worked at WSB. I'll never forget that. I said, Chris, you want to go with me this weekend? We're going to go to a wedding. And he was, I think it was eight at the time, seven or eight. And he said, oh, okay. I said, it's going to be in a church. And he looked at me and he said, a church? I said, yeah. He said, a real one, like on TV? I said, yeah. Yeah, a real one, like on TV. So as far as Christmas, we've kind of played up, or I always played up the Father Christmas aspect, the winter solstice, and how all those images from Christmas are really Celtic and have to do with the old religious ceremonies, the old Wiccan religion, and which I think is really, really nice. I mean, as long as one is going to celebrate a Northern European holiday. Globally, the way we do Christmas, okay, that's fine. And with all the global climate change that's happening even as we speak, and by the way, we have an article from another Australian news source that is kind of chilling. We may let that go until Monday. I don't know if I can if I can get into it. But as long as Christmas is what it is, and as long as, you know, almost every single symbolism used in the celebration of Christmas is taken from the old Celtic or Wiccan faith, religion, earth-centered, sun is disappearing, eek, eek, eek. You know, let's build a fire, let's turn on the lights to attract the sun. Since that's the case, why not celebrate it, you know? We go to, we've gone to dinner with our Jewish friends for Passover, Seder. We've spent time with our Muslim friends, Mbada and his wife, Kathy, for Eid. I'm sorry, I'm very embarrassed here, but I forget the exact name of the holiday, but it's a festival. And what are you playing? Is this Christmas music?
Ho, ho, ho.
All right, we'll be back after the break. We are going to get serious here and get down to the program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see.
What?
Somebody
hung mistletoe?
Waits for you. Kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you...
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. As I wrote in the blog today, the word is beginning to be heard across the country. Impeachment, impeachment. As reported today at afterdowningstreet.org, the ACLU of Southern California has called for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney for the high crimes and misdemeanors of which they are exceedingly guilty. These have arisen out of their abuse of power and numerous violations of the Constitution. The board of directors of the ACLU of Southern California voted yesterday without objection. There was one abstention, to call on Congress to promptly convene impeachment hearings. And the ACLU of Southern California will shortly release a report detailing the grounds for impeachment of these two thugs. And also, Theodore Lowy, a professor of American institutions at Cornell University and author of several books, including The End of Liberalism, said today, quote, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Judiciary Chair John Conyers, and the vast majority of Democrats in Congress are making a grave constitutional error in keeping impeachment off the table. Impeachment does not mean removal. It means putting the accused before the bar of judgment. Clinton was impeached, but not removed. Mr. Lowy added, quote, impeachment can be a method of achieving a modicum of balance between the branches of government. The Bush administration has totally thrown that balance off. Some of the same individuals who helped impeach Clinton, reducing the power of the executive then, are now backing the notion of a unitary executive. We are moving beyond the imperial president to what Clinton Rossiter warned us of in 1948, and that is constitutional dictatorship. End quote. Now, the bad news regarding the ACLU's position... I'm referring to the national ACLU. As you know, the state ACLUs are fairly independent. They do not necessarily have to sign on to what is determined on the national level, although they usually do. The bad news, then, regarding the national ACLU's position of impeaching these thugs is found in an interview with the ACLU national president, not the board chairman, but the president, Nadine Strossen. The interview was conducted by David Swanson of the AfterDowningStreet.org website. Swanson said, do you think George Bush should be impeached? Nadine Strossen answered the following, quote, I think there's a case for him to be impeached, but I don't think it would be a good idea. The reason I say there's a case, partly, is because partly, under the Constitution, it's high crimes and misdemeanors, which are not defined, and the latest precedent we have is having a, and then she uses a slang term for oral sex, in the Oval Office, and lying about it is considered to be a high crime and misdemeanor. While Bush has clearly lied to Congress, the American people, to the media about much more serious infractions and violations of the Constitution. He's had a view that as Commander-in-Chief he can do whatever he wants, that he's above the law, that he doesn't have to abide by the laws that are duly passed by Congress. In one breath, he's signing them, and in another breath, he's saying he doesn't have to follow them. So I think if what Clinton did can be considered a high crime and misdemeanor, then what Bush did could be. Do I think it would be a good idea to impeach him? I think, Nadine Strossen says, it would be a terrible idea to impeach him. Among other reasons, I think it would have the effect of placing disproportionate responsibility onto him when a lot of the blame for the violations I'm talking about rests in the hands of Congress. Congress did not have to vote for the Patriot Act, as they did almost unanimously in the Senate. Congress did not have to expand his domestic wiretapping power this summer, even beyond what he was initially doing in his secret program. Congress did not have to roll over and play dead with respect to torture and rendition and Guantanamo and all the other human rights disasters. They really bear a lot of responsibility, and we should not be letting them off the hook. By going after Bush, it deflects responsibility from Congress. It deflects responsibility from the courts, which have been issuing a lot of bad decisions, I think. It also deflects responsibility from the Democrats. It makes it too much of a partisan issue. There is bipartisan responsibility here, and for that reason, I strongly oppose impeachment. I'm not speaking for the ACLU. I know some people in the ACLU would like to see it. End quote. I don't quite understand Ms. Strossen's, I understand what she's saying. I understand plain English, and she's right as far as she goes. But because the Congress signed off on so many of these acts that Bush then either took to extremes, or that would be B. A would be because members of Congress did not sign it, were stampeded into it. Now, I realize that's abrogating their responsibility, and that's what Nadine Strossen is calling for, responsibility on the part of these dumbasses in the Democratic Party. Okay, I appreciate that. But that does not relieve Bush and Cheney from the violations of their oath of office. So I don't quite understand. I finished up my little mini-blog today by saying a call to the national office of the ACLU might help expand Ms. Strossner's point of view where it concerns impeachment. The number is, it's a toll-free number, 888-567-ACLU, 888-567-ACLU. That's also the number that will handle your membership request. You're not a member? We should be. 888-567-ACLU if you want to... let the ACLU know. Now, in 73, of course, the ACLU came out against Nixon, as David Swanson points out at afterdowningstreet.org, like a tsunami. And you can make the case very quickly, very easily, and very factually that George W. Bush makes Dick Nixon look like, look like what? A slobbering idiot. A nothing. Yes, illegal bombing. Yes, spying on Americans. Yes, abusing the IRS. But to the extent that Bush and his evil cabal have infiltrated every single branch of government, absolutely nullified their power, replaced heads of agencies with political operatives, not unlike the Soviet Union, it's incredible. What Bush has done and Cheney's done, if the American people, that's us, if we're willing to correct it, it's going to take 30 years to correct it. So I don't understand the ACLU's position on that. All right, so impeachment. Nancy Pelosi, I don't know if this is true or not. Is it true? I've seen the several places that Nancy Pelosi has said if she gets 10,000 letters requesting impeachment, she'll let it go forward. Is that what she's... I don't know if this is true or not. But everybody is, I mean, not everybody. I've gotten a lot of emails. I've seen a lot of stuff on various websites that Pelosi was overheard to say that she'd introduce impeachment when she'd received 10,000 handwritten letters. 10,000 handwritten letters. Now, there's an effort being made to, not to send them to Pelosi, but to send them to Cindy Sheehan, who will then take them to Pelosi. I mean, this whole thing is madness.
Doesn't that remind you a little bit of the teacher rapping the kids on the fingers and saying, you know, go write 100 times on the chalkboard?
Yeah, sure.
You know, I will not chew my gum in class. What, 10,000? I mean, how old is this woman? 10,000 signatures, 10,000 handwritten letters? They can't be signatures on a petition. 10,000 handwritten letters. They should all just write, you know, I will not vote for you unless you impeach. I will not vote for you unless you impeach. I might as well be keeping in line with, you know.
Well, that's why I don't even know if this is real. But I got an email here from Scott, who sent, I believe he sent this to Pelosi today. Dear Speaker Pelosi, the custodians of our nation, the men and women who swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, have yet to rise above their lesser corrupt loyalty to their corporate handlers. They have ushered in a catastrophic era of domestic fascism, which Mussolini himself defined as a merger of the powers of the corporation with the powers of the state. Cheney and Bush have colluded to violate the Geneva Conventions, the International Convention on Torture, and the UN Declaration of Human Rights, and they have approval ratings nearly 20 points below Richard Nixon. I call on you in the name of all you have striven for, on your good conscience and your colleagues, impeach Cheney and impeach Bush. Prove to the world that these criminals are not America, do not believe in America, will not be tolerated by America. Do this now. Stop them in their tracks and deadlock the country over the shame and criminality that this administration has brought upon us all. It would be better to stop the nation altogether than to continue down the road they have charted for us. Every day brings a new insult to the conscience and to our heritage as Americans. Stop them, Ms. Pelosi. According to our law, if you witness a crime or know a crime is being committed and you do nothing to warn of it or stop it, you become guilty of that crime. You become an accessory before or after the fact. You and Congress are liable for the crimes of this administration precisely to the extent that you have seen the crimes and done nothing to stop them. And you do see them. Do not let this shameful page in our history turn without standing clearly and proudly on our American heritage of fair play, truth, and justice. Try them now. Try them both now. And it's signed by, it's signed by Scott. And his last name, yada, yada, yada. Well, Sam, thanks. Thanks for sending this to me. It's a good letter. It's a good letter. And the only argument I have is impeachment is not trial. Impeachment is indictment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, well, of course. You can find this at rawstory.com. The Office of Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, today denied an internet rumor suggesting that she would pursue impeachment measures against Cheney should she receive 10,000 handwritten letters in favor of the measure. She could receive 100,000, a million, and she wouldn't. Pelosi spokesman Brendan Daly called the notion absolutely not true. The rumor appears to have stemmed from a Sunday blog post at Thinking Out Loud, which claimed to have received a tip that Pelosi would reconsider moving forward with the impeachment resolution against Cheney brought by Dennis Kucinich, but only if she received enough handwritten letters demanding it. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you know, you knew that, and so did I. We knew it wasn't true. We knew it wasn't true. 10,000 letters. Oh, my God. Regarding the guy here in Atlanta that, while the rest of the city, we talked about this the other night, while the rest of the metro Atlanta, North Georgia, is under this horrendous drought, water is just about gone from everything. We got 0.14 inches last night because I guess God heard Sonny Perdue wailing down here and said, okay, okay. But a rich guy out here named Carlos, who was using 400,000 gallons a month. The normal usage is about 6,000 for a normal family. And, you know, everybody's going, well, what the hell is he using it for? Well, we may have an answer here. James in Seattle writes, Dear Mike, I'll bet anything that Rich Carlos fellow is actually hoarding water, and that's the reason for his water usage surge. There was a study done back in the early 80s in a county in California in the midst of a rain drought there. The public utility asked everyone to voluntarily curtail their water usage. That same utility also tasked their local University of California campus with following the usage from the public utility's statistics on water usage. Their findings? There was absolutely no change among the poorest, a dramatic drop in usage among the working and middle class, and a dramatic increase among the wealthiest. Now, did you get that? No change among the poorest people, a drop in usage among the working and middle class, dramatic drop, and a dramatic increase among the wealthiest people. Doing blind interviews, thereby not recording their names, University of California academic researchers found that the guilty wealthy had dramatically increased their water usage because they had begun hoarding water when the utility asked everyone else to, or everyone to curtail their usage. Many had even purchased large water tanks to aid in their water hoarding. Whether water hoarding or water boarding, the greedheads are responsible. Yeah, you know, I guess I'm not surprised there. Of course not. Once, you know, if you have a lot of money, if you're wealthy and they say, well, the global climate change is coming, the planet's going to heat up, okay, just buy an extra 20 or 30 massive air conditioners. If water is running out, okay, just buy all you can and hoard it, yeah. James goes on, with regard to that Blackwater investigation, along with Buzz Krongard and the 9/11 connection, there's also the item that Blackwater is widely reputed to have purchased those weapons, which they sold on the Iraqi black market, from international arms dealer Victor Bout, an arms dealer to the rich and famous. Chief among them, of course, are Osama bin Laden and the Taliban. The CIA is also reported to have used Victor, but that hasn't been verified yet. It is important to note that since the CIA is now outsourcing over 60% of their spy budget to private contractors, such work is exempt from the Freedom of Information Act requests or lawsuits, since that only covers the government. How about that? Although the SEC, when requested for the status of those 3,000-plus cases, whose original documents were housed in Building 7 of the World Trade Center and destroyed in the building's collapse, refused to honor the Freedom of Information Act, Information Act request. Also, in the 2006 Defense Appropriations Bill, the Pentagon was permanently exempted from the FOIA. Of course, this means the Pentagon is also exempt from ever revealing the backgrounds of those military contractors flying as passengers to attend Pentagon-scheduled seminars on some of those four jets on September 11th, 2001. James in Seattle. And let me see what else we have here. One more email. Rick, can I get... No, I don't have time to get this. Yeah, I do. This is from Rich, who writes, with all the appropriate Nazi comparisons being thrown around about the Bush administration, I thought I would share my story about my encounter with a real former Nazi. I lived in Berlin, Germany for 8 years. I had a chance to meet the father of my good friend and sometime roommate. His father was just old enough to have spent a solid couple of years in Hitler's army before they started putting 12-year-olds in uniform to defend das Vaterland. He was a demure kid and kind Bavarian with a good sense of humor who had made a good living for himself as a professional photographer after the war, not by being a fanatic, but through hard work in boot camp, doing his duty as a good German in his times and becoming a by-the-book, do-your-duty-and-don't-ask-questions soldier. He was assigned to the Waffen-SS, the Weapons-SS, as opposed to the Gestapo. Upon being informed of this, I was rather taken aback. I was under the false assumption that the SS was like the U.S. Marines, an elite kick-ass group of soldiers that were first in and first out with no man left behind. No, my friend told me, they were Hitler's favorites. They were kept close to home, out of the action until the end, and given cushy assignments like occupying forces or administration of the Reich. It is probably the reason my father is alive today. It makes me wonder, Rich writes, whose Bush's SS is. I postulate that after the last reservist and the last National Guardsman is sent off to some dusty hellhole, the overpaid, battle-hardened mercenaries of Blackwater will be sent to the home shores in the wake of their umpteenth scandal with their heavy weaponry and scandal on their shoulders to fill the places of National Guardsmen in strategic locations. That's the time to check that your powder is dry. Rich. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 10 past the hour, or 7 past the hour. There is a mental health crisis in the U.S. military. I don't know if you're aware of this. There's a suicide epidemic. That's how it's being termed. CBS network. The reason I say U.S. television is because the story is from the French news agency. According to an investigation by CBS television, veterans, this is astonishing if this number is true, veterans were killing themselves at the rate of 120 a week. At least 6,256 U.S. veterans committed suicide in 2005, an average of 17 a day. The network reported, CBS reported, with veterans overall more than twice as likely to take their own lives as the rest of the general population. CBS quoted veterans' rights advocate Paul Sullivan as saying, quote, those numbers clearly show an epidemic of mental health problems. CBS quoted the father of a 23-year-old soldier who shot himself in 2005 as saying the military did not want the true scale of the problem to be known. Mike Bowman, the father, said nobody wants to tally it up in the form of a government total. They don't want the true numbers of casualties to really be known. Paul Rykoff, former Marine and founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans for America, said on CBS television, quote, not everyone comes home from the war wounded, but the bottom line is nobody comes home unchanged. CBS said it was the first time that a nationwide count of veteran suicides had been conducted. Is now, when they say U.S. veterans, they're talking about all veterans, I guess. Good God. That's kind of general. Here's specific. This is from Scarsdale, New York, or Syracuse, New York, Associated Press from yesterday. A soldier who served two combat tours in Iraq was arrested yesterday, Wednesday, for leaving the army without permission more than a year ago, to seek treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. At a news conference hours before his arrest, Sergeant Brad Gaskins said he left the base in August 2006 because the Army wasn't providing effective treatment after he was diagnosed with PTSD and severe depression. Gaskins said, quote, they just don't have the resources to handle it, but that's not my fault, end quote. Todd Ensign, an attorney with Citizen Soldier, which is a GI rights group that is representing Sergeant Gaskins, said the case is part of what he calls a coming tsunami of mental health problems involving Iraq and Afghanistan vets. Last month, the Veterans Administration said more than 100,000 soldiers were being treated for mental health problems, and half of those specifically for post-traumatic stress disorder. Good God. Mr. Gaskins, Sergeant Gaskins, an 8-year Army veteran, served 2 tours in Iraq and a tour in Kosovo. He said his mental health began deteriorating during his second tour in Iraq, which began in June 2005 when his job was to conduct road searches and locate improvised explosive devices. He said after returning to Fort Drum, New York in February 2006, he began suffering flashbacks and nightmares, headaches, sleeplessness, weight loss, mood swings that took him from depression to irrational rages. Military doctors sent him to the Samaritan Medical Center in Watertown, New York, where he spent 2 weeks and was diagnosed with PTSD. When he later asked his commanders about returning to that hospital, they told him it would delay any chance he had at obtaining a medical release, Gaskins said. At the time, the Fort Drum Mental Health Facility had a staff of 12 caring for approximately 17,000 soldiers. Gaskins said that because he was unable to get proper help, he requested a 2-week leave and went home to New Jersey, where he has been living since. Gaskins added he hasn't been able to get a job because of PTSD. He and his wife is separated, and he only has supervised visitation rights with his 2 children. See, it's horrifying enough when it's a war that might have legitimate reasons, but when you take a look at Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, and you come to the quick, obvious conclusion that there was no valid reason whatsoever for any of those conflicts, none whatsoever, but especially not Iraq and Afghanistan. And you realize what is being done to the U.S. military by this Bush crime syndicate. It's heartbreaking. And it makes people like me and possibly you extremely angry. All right. And by the way, regarding Pakistan, the thought occurred to me, if there's anyone left in the Muslim world who in any of those countries that comprise the Muslim crescent across the Middle East and into South Asia, if there's anyone left who still believes that Bush is promoting democratic ideals in the Muslim world, what do they think about what's going on in Pakistan? Where Bush, Bush sent his hitman, his murderer, his wet work operator, Negroponte, over to set up the death squads to start eliminating Musharraf's top people. But Bush Bush just sits on his ass, as does Condoleezza Rice. Remember her? You don't? Oh, she's the Secretary of State. Yeah. They talk about wanting to bring democracy to the Middle East or the Near East or whatever the hell these countries are considered. I don't know where Pakistan is considered on that that crazy terminology. But here Bush and everybody in his administration has made it very clear that sometimes you are better served, you being the government, the neo-fascist government of the United States, if you back a dictator, a military dictator, someone who controls both whatever civilian infrastructure, political infrastructure there is, and the military infrastructure. And in this case, that's Pervez Musharraf. Now, Bush makes little pee-pee noises about, wah, 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 democracy, democracy, wah, wah, wah. Take off your uniform, take off your uniform. But that's all bat squeeze for the people back home. Everybody in Pakistan and the rest of the Muslim world understands what the rat bastard in the White House is really saying. You don't forget who his supporters are: the Saudi royal family, the Kuwaiti royal family, the Jordanian royal family, the Egyptian dictator. It just goes on and on. Does anybody in the Muslim world really think that Bush is trying to bring democracy or representative government to any country in the Middle East? The quick answer is hell no. Then why are there people in this country who think it's true? All these Bush supporters who will tell you, well, you know, bring a democracy and make that part of the world much safer. Well, if that's the case, then why not go to work in the United Arab Emirates? Let's start there. Abu Dhabi, let's go there. Let's go to, where else can we go to? Kuwait, Saudi Arabia. Americans are just the most politically ignorant clutch of lemmings ever. It's just unbelievable. For the most part, U.S. governments, since the Spanish-American War, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, we support the military dictator that's already there, or we bring our own. You know, that's one thing about the United States. If there's not a military dictator handy, we'll bring one. You know, we'll bring one, and we'll overthrow the duly elected government and install the military dictator. And usually the military dictator will be somebody who looks the same as the people over whom we've just installed him and who speaks the language. Whether it's Vietnamese or Farsi, it really doesn't matter. And the rest of the world knows this. The rest of the world sits back and says, you goddamn hypocrites, every single one of you Yanks. You're fools and hypocrites and idiots and politically stupid. Do you think the rest of the world, while we're out here struggling just to live, do you think we believe the squat sounds that are coming out of your president's mouth? We don't.
I'm dying, or the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you. I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very bad
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
I am the promise never broken.
It is 21 past the hour. Do we have some folks holding on? I think we do, don't we? We do indeed. Plus a couple open lines. The number is 800-989-1480. William is calling from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, William, welcome to the program.
Hey Mike. I wanted to...
It's Will. I saw William. I thought, who in the hell is William? It's Will.
Yeah.
All right, Will.
It's been a while since I called in. I wanted to get the word out.
Have you changed your name?
No, I haven't.
Okay, good.
I wanted to call in and get the word out about a Secret Service raid that occurred yesterday in Evansville, Indiana.
Oh, yeah?
There's an organization called Liberty Dollar that is trying to restore constitutional currency. As you may know, the Constitution says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin tender in payment of debts. And these folks are selling 1 ounce silver pieces for $20 each, and urging people to spend them like money.
Yeah.
It's voluntary. It's basically since it's not legal tender, it's a barter currency. And there's nothing illegal about that. But yet, the Secret Service raided their national office yesterday.
Well, probably charged him with counterfeiting.
I don't see how, because their currency doesn't in any way resemble U.S. currency.
Well, the currency issues, I'm vaguely, very vaguely familiar with the requirements and stipulations and restrictions in the Constitution regarding money. All I really know is we went off the gold standard 80 years ago, went off the silver standard of 35 or 40 years ago.
Right.
And the money right now is only as good as the faith of the international community as the standard monetary unit, which is rapidly fading. Once that falls, of course, the euro or the yuan or whatever, the new money is going to take the place on the international stage, take the place of the dollar. When that happens, then we will know for once and for all that American empire is finished, insofar as it ever having a chance to do anything good or proper or appropriate. At that point is when I believe the Americans will unleash, the Bush crime family and the corporations that own this country will unleash pure hell on the rest of the world. So that's about all I know regarding monetary issues. Money is a funny thing anyway. In very few countries is it backed by anything other than the goods and services that are produced by that country.
Well, yeah, when Nixon pulled us out of the Bretton Woods Agreement, that was the international gold standard, and when Nixon pulled the U.S. out of Bretton Woods, then everybody else pulled out.
Well, I don't know what to say, Will. Keep me posted on what happens to the raid. Although the people who were involved in the raid, although I probably will see it in the news someplace. But I'm so old, Will, I can remember when the money said, I think it was $5 bills or $10 bills, they all said silver certificate, and you could take them to a bank, because I did this when I was a kid. You could go to a bank with your $5 bill, your silver certificate, and get five silver dollars, which I just thought was so cool. Thanks, Will. Appreciate you checking in. Josh is calling from Pensacola, Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Josh.
I'm here.
Hey. Hi, it's Mike.
Hi, Mike, you and I spoke personally a couple of times when we lived in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah?
At an arts festival. Three issues. If you haven't read Nine by Jeffrey Toobin, make it your business to do so. The wonderful quote that gave us this fool for president.
Yeah, I've heard it's a good book, yeah.
A very, very fine book. Number two, there's talk that if there's an impeachment proceeding brought, Bush is going to blame Cheney for everything, and he will appoint his brother, Jeb, whatever his name is,
right, it doesn't.
To continue the dynasty.
Right.
And number three, his flying performance in the military. Every one of us who flew in the military or in civilian life have had physicals, have had student pilot licenses, military or civilian.
Right.
And I don't know anybody who has not retained them over the years, because that's your proof of your ticket to fly in these airspaces.
Right, right.
And there is no such evidence anywhere of the illustrious boob ever having flown an airplane or taken a training session or passed a physical, and probably for the same reason, cocaine.
Which means that everything about him is a lie.
Yeah, there is nothing factual about him except that he's a constant loser of money. He's lost in every business he's ever been in.
Isn't that the truth?
And he's now bankrupting the United States. Our great-grandchildren will be paying his debt for this war while our bridges and our roads go to hell.
Josh, I hear you loud and clear. Hey, listen, I got a break here. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll talk again. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. Protecting what he feels right. Fights against wrong and right.
Bedtime Lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I got an email here. A couple hours ago, the Senate Judiciary Committee reported out a FISA bill that does not include retroactive immunity for the telecom companies that helped the Bush administration spy on Americans. That's what the Bush crime family was trying to get, immunity. And the telecom companies were trying to get immunity because they clearly broke the law, and they don't want any lawsuits. Well, the Senate has sent on to the full Senate a bill about future spying on American citizens that doesn't include retroactive immunity for what these telecoms have already done to us. Now, I guess in a manner of speaking, that's good news and a victory. To my way of thinking, it all sucks because why are we being spied on to begin with? But, you know, you take what you can get, right? At least you do in Bush world when you have people like Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi running the opposition. However, all this means the bill now moves to the full Senate without that language included. However, the retroactive immunity will be introduced as an amendment to the FISA bill. This is how it all works. Now, Senator Chris Dodd has said he will filibuster any amendment seeking to add this immunity to the bill. And by filibustering, if this one Democrat stays, if it happens, I'll be shocked. But by filibustering, he'll force the opposition to find 60 votes to pass this provision, which means they'd have to come up with 11 Democrats. Well, that shouldn't be too hard, should it? 11 Democrats who will drop their pants and bend over for the Bush crime family once again. So, just thought you might like to know that this thing passed out of, I'm sure the vote was along party lines in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm sure it was 10-9. Because there are 10 Democrats and 9 Republicans, I think. So we shall stay on top of that one, right? All right, back to your phone calls. Richard is calling from West Virginia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Mike. Hey, been a long time. I never did call, but I've been listening to you for a long time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
The one thing I have wrong, I used to listen from 6 to midnight. I had Stephanie on, then I stopped for Oberman, and then you. That's the only people I can stand, you know?
Yeah.
Now they took...
They took Stephanie off, didn't they?
Stephanie off, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can still get her by streaming the program, but I guess you have to get up early in the morning to do that, right?
Yeah, well, I don't have anything to get her with.
Oh, you don't have a computer?
Oh, no.
You have Sirius, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
But... I've been trying to talk my wife into getting one, but, you know, she says I'm an old man, and maybe that might not be a good idea, you know?
Why?
you know what women think of old men on computers, you know?
Well, I'm not sure. What?
Well, she's afraid I get on and get in trouble, you know? And she works for the FBI, you know?
Oh, are you talking about... Now, your wife worked for the FBI?
Yeah, I'm retired.
She still works for him?
Yeah.
Does she?
Yeah.
Can you say what she does?
Yeah, she's in the fingerprint division.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to get my fingerprints, it might go through her.
Yeah, all them guns you're going to buy, it just might go through her.
Let me tell you what, Richard. The FBI has a file on me about as thick as the West Virginia. What town you live in?
Fairmont.
All right, about as thick as the Fairmont, West Virginia phone book. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they have any on me right now.
Well, not if you, as long as you don't get a computer.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of worried about. I think that's what she's worried about. As long as she was here, you know.
Yeah.
But she's off. She works in the afternoon.
Oh, I see.
But I want to tell you that when I'm listening to you or Oberman now.
Yeah.
That's all I do, and I watch the C-SPANs and no voice. I watch ball games and turn the volume off.
Uh-huh.
But I enjoy your show, and I'm going to listen as long as I can.
Well, thank you. Is there any reason why you'd have to stop listening?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. And you tell Kathy and your little daughter.
Okay.
To hang in there. And I know what you got in that little girl, because I got a little granddaughter about the same age.
Yep. They're just little bundles from paradise.
Yeah, they are. I tell you, they just, we're going to pick them up Sunday to bring them here for... They're in Ohio. We're going to pick them up and bring them home for a week.
Well, that sounds like fun.
And they keep calling all the time about when you're going to pick us up, Grandpa.
Uh-huh.
That's good. But you keep up the good work, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate you checking in. You take care. Richard and I were in the war together. We were. We were in the paratroopers together.
You had a cute little granddaughter, Molly's age, a few years ago.
I know. She's grown up, though.
She's six now.
She's six, right. Patrick is calling from South Carolina. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Patrick?
I'm sitting. I was getting a little nervous. I hear my earpiece starting to beep. So I'm getting ready to die off on me. And so I'm going to make it quick. Anyway, I listen to you every night, and I want to say thank you for using your forum and your platform to make good sense from. And I have two things. One was a comment on something a caller earlier said about the Secret Service basically going in and shutting down this place that was using some small piece of silver
that
they were valuing at about $20 a piece.
Yeah.
I don't see the difference between that and Best Buy selling gift cards or casinos using poker chips.
Well, that's
true. Still more counterfeit. I mean, it doesn't represent any other currency that's protected by law, supposedly, right?
Yeah.
It's not a copy of the Mona Lisa.
No.
It's not representing itself to be something other than what it is.
That's true.
For a group of people agreeing that, I mean, if they wanted to use celery sticks or whatever.
Patrick?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I lost you there. I think your phone is dying.
No, I'm still here. No, I just have really good noise cancellation, so you can't hear the truck too good.
Oh, I see.
And the other thing is, you know, I would like to invite your loyal listeners, because I can't really take Fox News anymore, if I can say that.
Sure.
To listen to Fox News, jot down who is providing the money to put that, can I say crap?
Crap?
On the air. Crud.
Yeah.
How about crud?
Yeah, crud. Yeah, crud right. would work. All right.
Crud, yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then go back and find out who the corporations are that own the, whatever is being peddled on that particular broadcast and refuse to buy any goods or services that they've got their fingers in. If they want to support a mind-numbing, I'm sorry, it's difficult for me to explain how I feel about Fox News without using language that probably isn't appropriate here. So,
I hear you.
But really, we should boycott anybody who supports that program, anybody providing funding to keep that on the air. And I would like to invite all your listeners to do that with me.
All right.
So I was kind of using your forum for my personal vendetta here.
All right.
Hope you don't mind.
No, not at all, Patrick. Sounds good. Listen, I'm glad you called in. Take care. We'll chat again. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. What's this? We have five open lines? See, the right-wingers are right, Kathy. No one gives a damn about this program. Nobody cares. I don't have an audience. I'm just some old left-wing communist that gets on here. When I got an email from some guy the other night, you said you better start using Rogaine. What is Rogaine? What is that?
Rogaine with minoxidil.
What is it?
It's a hair regrowth system.
Oh, no, hell no. I want every single hair to fall out. Then I'm going to have to get up in the morning and arrange
it. The reason you don't have any callers is because Keith Olbermann did all your topics. So everyone's heard it. they're over it. Plus, everyone's mesmerized by the debates and who's wearing what. And
maybe it's just a crappy program tonight.
That's true.
That's probably the reason. All right, we have a break now. I've got an email here from Bob that I want to share with you, and then Either we'll go back to the phones, and if there's no calls, we'll just go ahead and play some music. You want to do that? Have you got some music? Let's play 41 Shots again, or... No?
That's too depressing. I think that's why you don't have callers today.
Because I played 41 Shots last night?
Tell you what, the Rudy Giuliani just scares me to death. That is a frightening man.
Well, he's...
Lisp and all.
He was interviewed by Charlie Gibson on ABC tonight, and I thought Charlie was just going to reach across the little space between him and plant a great big old wet kiss right on his Italian mouth. It was unbelievable. All right, quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
All righty. 10 before the hour. John is calling from Kansas City, Missouri, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John.
Oh, hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Great to talk to you. Man, I've been listening to you for quite a while, and I've never really called on the radio before. But actually, I had the I was driving home. I was listening to a gentleman named Rusty Humphreys. I don't know if you've heard of him, some right-wing guy. He was going on about – I'm sorry?
No, I've heard of him, but I don't think I've heard the program.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's really goofy. I don't have Sirius in my wife's car, so that's what I was driving in. I just listen to whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so, you know, he's proceeding to talk about the Democratic debate that's going on tonight and saying how boring it is. They're talking about, you know, domestic issues like Social Security and whatnot, saying how boring it is. So, and he's, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So anyways, I was very inspired to call in and just ask him what would be exciting to you, you know, bombing somebody, you know, starting another war. And so I call in, and the screener says, what would you like to talk about? And I told her what I wanted to talk about. And she said, oh, okay. And then she kind of started debating me for a little bit.
Right.
And basically, she said, okay, John, I appreciate it. Thanks for your call, and hang up. So, and they let me go. So it's basically like he's sitting there talking about a debate, how boring it is, and then he basically doesn't want to debate about the debate. So I don't know. I just anyway. So that's what inspired me. And I came in and I came home and I was like, honey, I'm going to call Mike Malloy because I have to tell him this goofball story. It's just, you know, they want to talk their crap, but they don't want to, you know,
right.
deal with it.
Yeah.
But,
well, there's one thing I've found, and it happens. I don't care where you listen. You listen to Atlanta to radio, Kansas City, Seattle. It doesn't make any difference. Right-wingers only want to hear from other right-wingers. I've made it clear on this program that I would love to hear from people who disagree with the liberal or the progressive point of view. But every time one call, and we don't screen them out. You know, our call, our engineer who handles our calls in Phoenix for this program, as long as they can put a sentence together and not going to use the F word, we'll put them on the air.
Uh-huh.
But they usually, as soon as they get on the air, all they want to talk about is what a jerk I am, and rather than address the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I, but what I found with right-wing talk show hosts invariably is that they do not want John, a liberal or a progressive or anyone with any brains whatsoever, because you will make them look so stupid.
Oh, I was so ready. I was kind of like just, I was salivating. I couldn't wait to talk to this goofball, you know?
I know, yeah.
But it was just humorous. And I guess maybe I'm naive because I do listen to your show and I have heard the right-wing guys call in. And so maybe I was like, well, you know, I'll just call this guy. But you're right. They don't want to listen to
They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. Well, listen, John, thanks a lot for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Call in again. Call in again. You know, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that we always, it's like, hey, yo, right-wingers, conservative, Bush supporters, or anyone who can justify what Bush has done, or anyone who can come up with one single thing that the Bush crime family has done in 7 years that benefits the entire country. And you've heard these callers, you've heard these people who call in. Oh, my God. It usually takes all of maybe 45 seconds, maybe a minute, until they totally just burn up. You know, they immolate, they self-immolate. It's really kind of disgusting. Or I get so sick of them, I just have to say, get off my radio show. Fernando is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Hey, Fernando.
Hey, Mike. It's been about, I don't know how long it's been since you were with Air America.
A little over a year now, about a year and a half.
Yeah, so it's been a long time since I talked to you, but I just wanted to reassure you that, no, your show isn't crappy. I have no idea why people aren't calling in, but it gives me a chance to talk to you, which I always like to do.
Well,
I have a lot of random thoughts. If you don't mind, I'll tell you a few.
No, go ahead.
All right, number one, I have no confidence whatsoever that a Democrat's going to get elected to the presidency this next time.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very afraid that it'll be rigged or fixed, or maybe there won't even be an election at all.
Well, there is those possibilities do exist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But the silver lining to that dark cloud is that if a Republican does get in office, people like us are probably going to get rounded up and put into a prison, and it might be more fun in that prison being with a bunch of liberals than it will be out in the street with all these ditto heads.
You know, I've only been in prison to visit. I used to manage a rock band, and we would give prison concerts. We did that twice until I couldn't. I just couldn't stand it, because we would go to prisons where people below the age of 19, 16 to 19, were incarcerated from serious heavy duty crimes. And I couldn't get into the fun thing. Fernando, I got to take a break here. Do you want to hold on? Fernando, you want to hold on? All right, let me put you on hold, and we'll come back to Fernando right after the break. And Peter and Jack and Mary, there you go. There you go. I don't know why folks weren't calling in. Like I say, maybe it was a crappy show. But with your input, we'll spice it up a bit, okay? All right, stick around. This is the top of the hour break, so you got time to go to the bathroom or fix a sandwich or put the cat out or whatever you need to do. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Is Fernando still with us? He is indeed. Let's go back to Fernando, who held on over the break here. Okay, where were we, Fernando?
Well, we were discussing just random thoughts.
Oh, that's right, random thoughts. Okay.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I'm thinking about is your chosen profession.
Yeah.
I believe that Air America and probably other liberal programs had a lot to do with the Democrats taking the slim majority that they did last November.
Yeah, I think that's true. That was part of the reason that the network was put together. That was a secondary reason. The primary reason was to join corporate America from the liberal progressive side. There was a definite need, a market vacuum for what we thought we were doing with Air America. But what happened was Air America got into the clutches of some real half-wits and jackasses, and as a result, they hit a brick wall and went bankrupt. And the people who own Air America now are no more liberal than the Newt Gingrich is. So it's kind of an awkward situation. But
you know, it's funny you should say that, because every once in a while, a woman comes on and does a commercial about her husband's stock brokerage business.
No. That's
and it sounds very unusual.
No, that what you're listening to is the owner of this network, Nova M.
Oh, is that what that is?
Right, and it's not. She's not a stockbroker. Her husband, Shelley,
yeah,
has among other enterprises, he advises people in what are called, what are they called, Kathy? What kind of annuities are they? Asset equity based annuities, which is a very good way to invest.
You mean like morally?
Well, no, from a financial standpoint, but also from the standpoint of being a safe investment.
Yeah.
If you want more information about that, you need to call the number. I don't have it off the top of my head here. But
Shelley Drobny?
Drobny.
Drobny.
Yeah, call him.
Well, I wish I had the money to invest.
Well, what do you need? $500, I guess. Yeah. You know, you can start. No, it's a good idea. And it beats the hell out of online trading. As far as I'm concerned, it beats directly investing with the stock market. You should.
Sure.
Next time you hear it, check it out. But they're not stock brokers. They're not. That's not what this is. It's
okay.
I just did a commercial for him. I'm going to have to send
you.
I'm going to send him a bill.
Getting back to this radio business.
Yeah.
Down here in South Florida, we have a guy around noontime that isn't always the greatest to listen to.
Yeah.
On Air America station.
Yeah.
Although it's not Air America, it's his own little network.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you do.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll push a radio button and listen to Rush Limbaugh just to hear what's happening with him.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing the loyalty that he has with these callers.
They're infatuated
and in love with him.
That's why they're called ditto heads.
You got that right. Anything he says goes.
Yeah, it's impossible for a Limbaugh listener to think for themselves.
And they're so ignorant. He's so ignorant and hateful and backwards thinking.
That's very true. Fernando, I've got a whole bunch of people that want to do what you're doing, and that's talk on the program. So thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate your checking in. All right, take care. Peter is calling from New Jersey, listening on Sirius. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Good. I have a theory I want to bounce off of you.
All right.
It pretty much has been on a fast track since Reagan stopped enforcing the Antitrust Act and the corporatocracy of pretty much now it's the world. It used to be the American corporations, but now it's international corporations are so big. And how he lowered the tax rate from 71% to 27% on people that make more than $3.2 million. The amount of money that these people, these top one-tenth of 1% of the people in this country have been making is horrendous.
Right.
And what has happened, especially in my life, here's the theory. Especially in my life, up to 4 years ago, I didn't care. All I cared about was just going and just making my mortgage, making my bills, surfing as much as I can, and just entertaining myself and being this selfish kind of animal. And all of a sudden, 4 years ago, I had this wake-up call that I had to get involved. I listened to you, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann. I have heroes now that stand up for this wonderful country of the people that's being stolen by these huge corporations and by these lobbyists and by all these monsters of people that don't have souls and are just greed-filled.
Yeah, you, Mike,
are one of the people that is actually putting the good, powerful energy back into the people because of the laziness and we were just like our eyes were kind of fogged over and we need some kind of wake up call. And it's for some reason the stream of consciousness throughout humanity, especially in America, it's wakening up now, and it's voices like yours that have been doing it, and I would like to thank you. So my theory is, do you believe in that stream of consciousness, of the waking up of the people to take back our country?
Well, I do, but I have to say, you know, while what you're saying is complimentary regarding me, and I do appreciate what you hear on this program, I want to make it clear that I get that kind of sense from people who contact this program, whether it's Bridget or Bob or Cindy or whoever the people are, you know, I come to realize the same thing. You know, I might have a program here and a microphone, and what these other people have are emails and computers, and it's kind of a big feedback loop. So
I know you make us feel like we're all in this together, but here's the scary part of this whole equation is that these monsters have actually stepped up the game, and the game is they're taking away, you know, our rights with posse comitatus and the habeas corpus, mm-hmm. and all these signing statements this monster has been doing, and what he's doing, he's setting it up. And within there's a window of opportunity here within the next year. They're going to make their play. And I feel the awakening of all of us, the stream of whatever energy made us, is giving us a warning that these monsters are about to make their play. And it's people like you that's keeping the warning sign up and showing us that what's happening now. That's why it's so important for you to stay on top of, like, especially Tom Hartman. He's been a big influence on my life, that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the way that you bring that powerful, like, energy of being pissed off at these monsters, these criminals, the Bush crime family, what a great slogan that is. Did you see when Stephanie Miller called Chris Matthews of the right wing tool?
I was watching that.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I saw that happen as it happened, and I thought it was great. You know, Stephanie's one of my heroes. So is Randy Rose. So is Tom Hartman. All those people that you named. We have very different styles. We have different approaches, but
you all bring something great to this great movement that's happening. Don't you feel it, Mike?
Well, but so do the people who contribute to the program. And I need to make that clear. And Peter, listen, thank you. What you say is very kind and very flattering, and I do appreciate it. I know you're being sincere. I know you're not trying to be a suck up or anything. I know you mean it, and I do appreciate it. It's just, I really do believe that, you know, kind of what Hugh Romney, what Wavy Gravy said at Woodstock, you know, if you got something to eat and you're not hungry, pass it on to somebody else. And, you know, that old hippie, right? 1969 hippie, hey, oh, let's dance kind of attitude that I still believe in. Only the dance is different and the music is different, and what we're feeding each other is not necessarily for physical sustenance, it's more for emotional or intellectual or psychological or spiritual sustenance. But now I hear what you're saying, and thank you. It's very kind, Peter. But I always like to make it clear that it's a feedback loop. I don't think I do anything original on this program. I'm a funnel, and I get it from so many sources, not just media sources, but also listeners. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
Let it be. And when the night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow, let it be.
22 past the hour, Ray writes in, the Air America website says you have returned to Air America. Is it true? No. No. I haven't gone to the Air America website in probably a year. I don't know what they're saying, Ray. But I would never work for Air America again. Air America is a lying, vicious, union-busting company. And, you know, it was great while it lasted, but when the rubber hit the road, the people who ran Air America the last year I was there turned out to be worse than scum, because they're right-wingers disguised as liberals or progressives. And, no, I do not work for Air America. I work for a brand-new network, Nova M, that is owned by the people who truly started Air America, until even they were forced to bail out. The confusion comes, I think XM Satellite Radio, that carries my program, and bless them for doing it, they have me on what they call the Air America channel. Now, I don't know if that means the only programming on that channel, except my program, is Air America. I have no idea. But I am in no way connected with Air America, and as soon as this bankruptcy thing is settled, I will probably sue them. I don't like them. I don't like the new owners. I don't like the old owners. As far as I'm concerned, they have destroyed the original concept of what Air America was going to be, the original the people that moved in before Air America went bankrupt. And I don't like the new group. And the reason I don't like the new group is because they will not honor the commitments that should be honored. This is, you know, just scummy, nasty-ass insider stuff, and I don't talk about it on the air because there's no point in talking about it. But I just frequently have to make that point. I am not, and never will be, unless Air America goes bankrupt again and, you know, the Drobnys would buy it or something, maybe so. But that's the only conditions under which I would ever go back to Air America. I'm just not interested in them. Oh, just give me the willies. And it's because the promise there, as far as I'm concerned, Air America broke its promise to the public. And that was to provide the kind of programming and the kind of distribution and management to make sure that Air America would turn out to be a strong voice for progressives. And that's not what happened. There are a couple of strong progressives still on that network, bless their hearts. But as far as Air America is a corporate entity, if you could see right now, you'd see me holding up my middle finger. I know, it's boring stuff. I'm sorry. Well, you know, Ray wrote and said, I hear you're back on Air America. And I had someone else write, Ann wrote the other day. A couple other people have been writing, hey, you're back on Air America. No, never. Okay, back to your phone calls. Jack is calling from Palm Beach, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Jack. Hey, Jack.
Yes.
Welcome to the program. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I'll be brief. We have a new attorney general.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to do is to have him bring forward two separate indictments.
Okay.
One under the RICO Act of continuing conspiracy of organized crime.
Yeah.
And the second one beseech the president and the vice president to answer the war crime indictments out of Portugal.
Yeah, that would be good.
And there's another country that had, I can't think of the name, this happened about 8-9 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago. Another country has brought war crimes indictment against both of them. You know, I brought this up to you about 2 years ago, and you never made anything of it. But I'll tell you what, I'm an attorney. The RICO Act fits for everyone that's alive. They specifically put it together to get the mafia. And you can indict a dead man under the RICO Act. Why don't you have somebody do something about that? Hello?
Yeah. No, I'm here. You want me to have somebody do something about that?
I don't know.
I have the same amount of power, Jack, as you do, which is, you know, in the age of Bush, practically nothing. But I hear what you're saying, pal, and I completely agree. If this new attorney general were to do what the Constitution says that office should do, then he would immediately arrest, I guess, or bring charges against the Bush, President, Vice President, against Bush and Cheney. The Attorney General is supposed to represent the people, not the rat bastard that occupies the White House. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. What's this I heard on the is it AP Network News that we carry on this network? I can hear it sometimes in queue when we're in a news break. That when Hastert, the longest serving Republican speaker in House history, is that what I heard? When Dennis Hastert exited the podium, he made his farewell speech tonight, is that right? And Pelosi ran after him to give him a hug? Really? Maybe that's because it's a big club, or maybe it's because they're all incipient fascists. You know, I have no idea. Here's what I know. Dennis Hastert was, Tom DeLay's puppet. DeLay knew that the speaker's job was way beyond anything he could get. So he had Hastert. Hastert used to be, he ran errands for Tom DeLay. You remember the hammer, don't you? The Roach Man. But the part of the story that is kind of pissy as far as I'm concerned is Nancy Pelosi scuttering over to give him a hug. Why? He would cut your throat, Ms. Pelosi, and step over the pool of blood that would form at his feet. What is with the Democrat? I don't know. I guess that I and probably 95% of the audience of this program we take all this stuff way too seriously, don't we? Because apparently nobody in the House or Senate gives a goddamn. They just don't care on the Democratic side. It's a game. It's a joke. All right, not all of them. But it's like most of the Democrats, and yes, I'm using the word most, not all, most of the Democrats, they must, I don't know, what do? Do they get together in a cafeteria someplace and laugh their asses off at the progressive Americans who busted their humps to overcome fraudulent voting machines and negative advertising and swift voting to get them elected, to get a majority in the House and the Senate? In the House and the Senate. Isn't that what we did? Didn't we do that? And what have we gotten back?
Well, Mike, they raised the minimum wage. It's almost as high as it was in Sweden 14 years ago now. So calm down.
Pelosi runs after Dennis Hastert to give him a hug. And I just immediately think, why? Why? He's the enemy, Ms. Pelosi. He's the enemy. He is an evil, thuggish, corporate, gangster, neo-Nazi pissant. Why are you going after him to hug him?
Maybe she was just patting him down, make sure he wasn't stealing a gavel or something.
No, she wasn't. Oh, Dennis, wait a minute. Oh, that was such a moving speech. Come here, and Mama hug you. Jesus, God. And then this boner freak gets on the house floor again, was it today, and starts crying again? What is with John Boner from Ohio? All this guy does is cry. When he retires, is Mama Pelosi going to run over and hug him too? Here, have a little lasagna. Calm down. It's all right. Eat this. There's some spumoni over here. All right? Calm down. Good God. Boner was crying about the... he always cries when funding bills, Kathy, come up for the U.S. military. Because Boner is a chicken hawk. He's a coward. And he's a thug and a thief. In other words, a typical Republican. He's an absolute coward. He wants other people to go die in a hideous situation, or kill, in a hideous situation that he would no more go near than he would go near, well, Nancy Pelosi, I guess. Remember when he handed her the gavel, when she was elected Speaker of the House, with that smarmy little, you know, pat the little lady on the head kind of attitude? I was hoping at that point, this is where I lost it with Pelosi. I was hoping she would take that gavel that he gave her and immediately crunch it right into his crotch. Just swing from, you know, from the shoulder height and bring it down right between his legs. Thwack! Now sit down and shut up! I'm the boss now! And when she didn't do that, I saw, oh no. Oh no. Running after Hastert. Mary is calling from Memphis, Tennessee. Mary, welcome to the program.
Greetings.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing lousy as usual, but that's all right. I wanted to get back to the PTSD question, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead, Mary.
The veterans are coming home angry and freaked out for a very good reason,
mm-hmm.
and that's they know they were lied to. They know they're being replaced with privatized Blackwater military,
yep.
and they know, they absolutely know, that having been in Iraq is a death sentence. If they didn't get it from bullets or bombs over there, they come home and they die from radiation sickness from depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And these angry veterans are not cowards. And unlike the current corporatist regime, they love our country and our fellow Americans and their families. And I wonder several things about this situation. I wonder about whether there might ensue a showdown between our legitimate military and Blackwater. And I think about the effect of a mere... two untrained snipers on the beltway, and then I absolutely marvel and wonder and bow down before the self-control of these many more than two veterans of Bush's carnage. I'm a chicken pacifist, and I'm angry.
Well,
and they have survived the horrors, and they are angry.
Yeah, you make some good points. You do. I never thought in my lifetime I would see the employment of a private military force to protect, in this case, members of the State Department. That's the job of the United States Marine Corps. It's not the job of some funky, freaked out, weird, kill them all, let God sort them out, private contractors. And I think you're right about the anger that some of these soldiers are coming back with. Remember, as much as I think Timothy McVeigh had his brain eaten by the right wing when he got back here, the neo-Nazi, the skinhead movement,
mm-hmm.
Timothy McVeigh made it very clear in his writings with Gore Vidal, the letters they sent back and forth, McVeigh was not a stupid man. He was a mass murderer, but he was not a stupid man. And he wrote that when he was in Desert Storm, the first invasion, and when he saw in that action and when he came back, and he's referring to Bush, one, how corrupt the government had become. That's when he decided that he was going to strike back. And the way he struck back, of course, was to kill 168 innocent civilians in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have to wonder, after reading those letters between Gore Vidal and Timothy McVeigh, I have to wonder, as you do, I can tell from your comments tonight, how many future Timothy McVeighs are walking around this country right now. And what's going to happen when, you know, to hell with Al-Qaeda, what's going to happen when these soldiers who have been exposed to this horror that was strictly constructed by George W. Bush to satisfy his megalomania, what's going to happen when they snap? And it's a scary scenario, Mary. It frightens
the hell
out of me.
It's going to be a rough thing.
Huh?
And you know, another odd thing that I'm wondering about at the moment is, where the heck is John K. Singlob right now? You know, with Negroponte being sent off to Pakistan, you know, where's his buddy?
Yeah, well, Singlob, who I got a very interesting email that I'm going to share now that you mentioned Singlob. I'm going to share it right after the next break.
Sam, go for it.
I'm sorry?
I said go for it.
Yeah, because one of our other listeners, Bob, brought up Singlob's name tonight, too. A lot of people, I would assume, are not real familiar as to who John Singlob was, a real American Nazi, who helped subvert the Constitution where it concerned the Iran-Contra affair. And also,
not to mention using sarin against U.S. Peace protesters.
Sure, We have so many of those psychopaths who are roaming around. Mary, thanks for checking in. Don't be a stranger. I appreciate what you had to say, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 10 before the hour. Thanks to our staff, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Thanks, everybody, for the program tonight. This is from Bob. Hey, Mike, while listening to the show last night, you mentioned Howard Cookie Krongard and his brother, A.B. Buzzy Krongard. There it was again, the familiar snap of recognition. Ex-CIA, recent Blackwater board member, Buzzy managed the firm that was used to place the put options on United Airlines a few days before 9/11. I remember the first time I had that snap. I was researching the Phoenix Program, the Army-CIA pacification campaign in Vietnam. The Phoenix Program routinely involved sweeps through hamlets to make mass arrests, brutal interrogations, the destruction of villages, napalming of rice fields, and widespread assassination. The first Secretary of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, was a veteran of this terror program, which left upwards of 30,000 civilians dead. And then I came across the name Edward Lansdale. Who was he? Well, he was an Air Force Major General, served in the OSS, the CIA, and allegedly a model for a character in Graham Greene's The Quiet American and Eugene Burdick's The Ugly American. He was a mastermind behind the scenes in the Philippines. The installation of the American-backed government of Nguyen Dinh Diem in South Vietnam and the plots to kill Castro. Lansdale was also in Dallas on November 22, 1963. According to the writer Fletcher Prouty, he wasn't surprised when he realized Lansdale was in Dallas for the assassination. He was there to make sure nothing went wrong. Lansdale was supposedly visiting his son in San Antonio, but a claim check found in his personal papers places him at a hotel used by the presidential entourage the night before the assassination. Researching Lansdale further, you'll come across General John Singlob and Oliver North. Singlob established connections with Latin American neo-Nazis in his anti-Semitic World Anti-Communist League, and he later served as its president. His work in the international arms trade, Singlob's, made him one of the linchpins in the Iran-Contra scandal. Oliver North regarded Singlob as a Lansdale protege, and Singlob was North's hero. The same players pop up over and over again when delving into America's dark history. It's like playing a demonic version of Where's Waldo? After recognizing the names, making the connections, it's possible to get an idea of the nexus, to catch a brief glimpse behind the curtain, and see a part of the machine at work, and become branded a conspiracy theorist. All I know is that when I feel that snap of recognition triggered by a name from the familiar list of usual suspects, it's time to look into it a little more. Maybe nothing will come of it, or maybe it'll lead to another look behind the curtain. Conspiracy theory? What's the alternative? Buy into only what the mainstream media peddles? I think that's called coincidence theory. You know, the whoopsie-daisy school of history where stuff just happens. Move along. There's nothing to see here, folks. I've found that it's impossible to unswallow the red pill. Regards, Bob. Yeah, John Singlob. A name that I became very familiar with back in the 80s. Back to your phone calls. Jeremy is calling from Lancaster, PA, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, how you doing? I don't know how to follow that up. I'm shivering.
Well, me too. I saved it to the end of the program because I don't know what the hell to say now either.
Oh, my gosh. You really put me on the spot. I guess mine's a little more vanilla than that. But
well, that's all right. That's okay.
I'm a lifelong liberal, thank God for my mom. But I find that the left is beautiful and just self-destructive because we have scruples. And we pick apart our own people as hard and scrutinize them as harder more than
right.
We get the right, because we already know what we expect from the right. And I think it's become epidemic over the last 8 years in particular. I think we had 2004 sewn up, but we were even, you know, Gore ignoring Clinton in 2000 and then Kerry ignoring, you know, everybody's scared to take any kind of risk. And now we have, you know, the right is running ramshot over us with their machismo and their straight talk. And while we sit back and wonder who's the best person. And I think our intent is 100% pure, 100% dead on. But at the same time, in today's political model, it's not working. I don't want to compromise, but I want to compromise because I don't want any more of this, you know.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I wonder what would happen if a candidate emerged on the left in the Democratic Party who was an absolute kick-ass, no excuses, call it like it is, a candidate, man or woman, who would stand up and say, look, this country is being run by a criminal enterprise. This administration has sent only God or Allah or both knows how many people to their deaths, American soldiers and civilians and children. This administration is destroying the country. You know, that kind of language. And,
right.
And I believe that the American public would react to that in a positive way. Not somebody to demagogue the issues. I'm not talking about another Huey Long or you know, the Kingfisher or somebody like that. I'm talking about somebody who would just stand up in righteous anger with a plan, not just like you know, people on this program like me and some of my callers, you know, just bitch and moan and complain, but people who would do that, who would make it clear that we've had enough and that they had a plan. The plan would be very simple: just restore representative government, bring back the checks and balances, reestablish the Constitution. How hard is that? And well, I just think, Jeremy, that if something like that were to happen, I think the American public would respond positively. Pal, I got to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again, I promise. Thanks to everybody who participated in the program tonight. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? It's Friday, right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.